Welcome to the Big Movement Podcast. If you're ready to create results and make huge strides in your business, finances, personal development, and health, then you're in the right place. Pushing past excuses and powering through procrastination can be a challenge alone. Here, you'll get the support, tools, and knowledge you need to get to the level you desire in your business and life. Let's get started with your host, Byron Ingram.
And welcome to another episode of the Big Movement Podcast. Today, I have a special guest. We have Oz Konar, who has been in sales and marketing since the age of seven. He's the best-selling author of two books, a serial entrepreneur of four successful businesses, a speaker, a consultant on digital marketing and lead generation. So we're going to talk about all things marketing today. So let's give a warm welcome to Oz. So Oz, welcome.
Thank you, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm great. So marketing since the age of seven, was it like you had your bowl of cereal and said, I could sell this?
No, it was quite an accident, actually. So a quick story. What happened is I'm originally from Turkey. So in Turkey, back in the day, I'm sure similar to United States, there are not a lot of supermarkets. So people do their shopping in open flea markets. It happens once a week. You go, you better do all your shopping because you're not going to see those guys again. And usually there's no like tent or anything like that. You're doing your shopping under like hot sweltering weather a lot of times. And I used to do this with my mom every single weekend. And one weekend we go and I see people are sweating like crazy. They're so thirsty. People are tired and exhausted. And we do our shopping and come back and I share the feeling. I feel the same way. And I tell my mom, Mom, I think people are really thirsty. What if I pick up a pitcher and glass and go back and give them some water, offer them water? She was like, oh, that would be really great of you. Why don't you just do that? And I do that and I bring one pitcher and it's done obviously in like 2 minutes and I come back home and do it again. Then I think on the third try, someone gave me money for that. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. I'm like, why did they pay me for this? Then I do it again and more and more people seeing from the other people, then I make a bunch of money. That's interesting. I didn't have the intention of selling this, but I guess this is how it works. Then I do it again and again. It's something little. Of course, it's not like a professional business, but it kind of stuck with me that I guess the core message I got out of that was that if you see a pain, a serious pain that people are going through, and if you have the right solution at the right time, people don't mind paying you or returning the favor. It doesn't have to be monetary. So that started my journey as an entrepreneur. Then ever since that, I always thought of what pain can I resolve so they can benefit from it and I can benefit as a business owner.
And that in itself is powerful because obviously that life lesson stuck with you, but you hit on something so critical, and that is solving a pain point. Because you think about how many people go into business and they want to do something like, oh, I'm passionate about this, but it doesn't really solve a pain. Like, well, I'm passionate about a lot of things, but that doesn't solve a pain point for somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that point, I think people are confusing certain phrases with each other. I mean, yeah, you hear things like some of the business coaches say you got to follow your passion and whatnot. But fortunately or unfortunately, the measuring stick for a business, the currency for a business is money. You might like money, you might not like money. I don't want to sound like a materialistic person, but if you're talking about your individual life or your feelings or your religion, that has no place maybe. But in business, that's the only measuring stick. So your passion for something might not equate you to make more money and more sales. So instead of just focusing on your passion, I always tell my clients, like, find a pain point that people complain about and they don't seem to have found a solution. Or if there are solutions and they're not good enough, create something better and put it in front of them. Simple as that.
Right. And that is so simple of finding a solution out there that people want. Because if you look at it, when people go to Google, what are they doing? They're entering in most of the times a problem they have a question about, and they're looking for a solution to buy.
Absolutely. Sometimes simple as that. Correct.
Yeah. It's like, it doesn't get much simpler than that. I have a problem. I need help with this.
And it's funny that people openly state their problems if you have an ear for it, right? You don't have to do hours of research. It's just sometimes very simple, and we have access to what people search. If you look at the keyword terms and whatnot, and you can see whole lots of information about the search volume on certain phrases and whatnot, and it gives you the problem they're going through. All you have to do is dig up and find a solution that is already existent, but they do a horrible job with marketing, or just create that solution yourself.
Right, exactly. It doesn't mean that you have to reinvent the wheel. It's just actually positioning a solution out there. That's so critical for businesses. They think that they have to reinvent the wheel. Like, there's no reason for it.
No, not at all. And I'll give you one example if you don't mind, Brian.
Oh, sure, definitely.
I used to go to a lot of networking events in New York City. My company's office is in New York City. So you, of course, naturally you meet a lot of people. And one thing that came across over and over from my conversations of hundreds of people is that they needed someone like simple. I know it's almost silly, but they need a photographer to do headshots. Like they're all starting entrepreneurs and they have their pictures from their college party days, but obviously they can't use that, right? They need
Right.
professional headshots, but they didn't have a trusted person to go ask for it. And they all thought that it was going to cost a lot of money because they hear photographers charge $2,000 to $3,000 for weddings and all that stuff. They just didn't know how to go about it. They're like, yeah, I know I got to get it done. I know it looks bad on my business card. I know on my website there's no picture and all that stuff. And I noticed that there are 10 other photographers on those events. And I was just wondering if it's just going to bugle me. I'm like, why is this happening? Like, people are, there are so many of them. There's too many of them almost. But these people are having this problem. Then I talked to one of them and we became friends. And I said, what if I can upsell your photography services to the entrepreneurs that I know? They'll pay me and I'll pay you whatever you're asking me to do. And we can agree upon an agreement. And within the first month, I sold 24 deals for her, which is what she sold in a matter of a year. So very simple things. I'm not saying this because I did this, but when you actually listen to people's problems, sometimes the solutions exist almost right next to them, but there's a disconnect. And if you can be the gap in between those two individuals, not only you can help both, you can also make money. And I haven't created anything meanwhile.
And that in itself is key. Sometimes it's about being the connector. If you're looking at a fast way to generate business, that you see a problem and you go out there and you look for the solution for it and just put the two together.
You bet. Absolutely.
Because you think about how many times in business people are stuck, like, well, I don't know what to do. But if you just do what you did there, you saw a problem and you found a way to meet the need.
Yeah, I think we end up putting ourselves in a box. Like a lot of businesses do that. Things start going down. It's like a downward spiral, not only in your business, also in your psychological world. And you think that there's no solution to your problem, and you're running a business, not noticing that businesses go through that same problem that you're going through for almost thousands of years, right? Problems are really, really fundamental. That technology changes. Right now, it could be problem with generating business through Facebook. Back in the day, it was like generating business in a flea market. Doesn't change. The core problem is you need more customers, and you need to figure out how to do that. So when you just take yourself out of the problem and look back and naturally just focus on what is actually happening, then you see the true picture. It could be a pipeline problem, it could be a sales problem, it could be a lead generation problem. There are only so many things that could be going wrong.
Right. And so then, how did you get into this world of marketing and lead generation? Because you have this amazing passion for it, where some people it's kind of like, I know I need to do it, but oh, it's painful.
I did not get into lead generation originally, Byron. So what I did is I always had an interest on social media, and I knew that I can leverage building websites for companies quite a bit because like 5, 6 years ago, not many companies had professional looking websites. They look really aged. So I said, if I can sell X amount of them a month, that's good revenue, and I can help them have a professional looking website, and they can also get some rankings and whatnot, and they can get some clients. But I haven't really thought about lead generation part of that. It was more of a design. And still to this day, I don't really understand web design that much, but I had always had a professional person who knows more than a lot more than I do on design. I will be the person who will be finding the people who are having this problem and searching for a solution. Either they need a new website or they're really not satisfied with their website. Okay. Then we started selling a bunch of web design deals, and after like going through 40, 50 of them, I had way too many people come back to me and tell me, "All right, Oz, you guys did a great job with the website, but how do I get traffic? How do I get more customers through this?" Which I haven't really thought about it because I thought, you know what, my job is to do web design. So that brought me back to that old memory of me solving it with the very thing that we just talked about, like finding a problem and solving it. And I noticed that these people are having a major problem. Now, just so we built the website doesn't bring any business to them because they need to drive traffic, they need to put together an offer. So I started kind of getting into that, and I noticed that that's even a bigger pain than website because honestly, when you think about it, people do not want a pretty website. People want customers, and they think that a pretty looking website will help them get those customers, right? So I was looking at the problem at a surface level, not deep enough. Then it made me notice that lead generation, if I can figure out a way to help them get in front of more business opportunities and help them close more deals, that'll be even more important than having a killer website. Because how many companies you and I know, they have like a $30,000 website built and they have no customers?
Right. It happens all the time.
All the time. Like people, they think that's the priority. They spend a couple of months on their logo, then on their business card, then on their website without having an actual plan on how they're going to sell their service and products.
Right. And I think that's where so many businesses get stuck at in the very beginning. What I've told people that I've worked with, it's the bulk of the money at the beginning, don't put it on the website because you can make it look pretty later. It's better to put that into lead generation of getting traffic because then you can invest in what's working instead of we think this is what people are going to like. Well, see what they're doing and then build it around that.
That is really so important. I mean, I tell everyone website building is a process. I mean, it's so easy nowadays, right? You can get one simple website up and running within hours, literally. But that shouldn't be the focus. First, you have to test your offer. Just because you think people will buy from you does not mean that they actually will pull out their credit card and pay you for that. What you think will work and what market demands are sometimes two different things. And I think the first thing that I can recommend to anyone, test your offer. Just talk to people who would be the buyers from you. Either offer your services for free or offer to give them some level of value or, for example, interview them. I remember when I first started with the lead generation services, I offered to generate leads for companies for free of charge. And I said, if you're happy with my services, I would ask for a testimonial from you that I can use to acquire more customers. I did that a couple of times and they were happy with the results and I got my testimonials and I built my business on that. So you got to always build value before you ask for something, but that's like testing. You got to talk to your people to see, because before honestly, I made these businesses, I own four of them right now, work. I failed four before. So you don't always hit the jackpot and every try. You do things wrong. You think sometimes things will work out. Sometimes they don't. It is better to figure out that maybe your offer is wrong or your product is not in demand before you spend $100,000 on it. I think that's the better place to be in and call the quits than spending that much, then finding out that you know what, it's not the product or service the market demands.
And that in itself is gold because you look at how many people, if they're, let's just say they're an entrepreneur, they want to create some info product, they'll spend months and months working on a course without ever asking the market, do you want this? And then they're disappointed when they spend this energy doing this amazing launch. It's like, well, no one bought it.
No, no one
Well,
bought it.
whoops.
Yeah, and they can't get back from that too. That's the sad part. So there, I see a lot of talented people. They do all of that, just like what you mentioned. They don't do any market research. They launch it, and it fails. But then that discouragement demotivates them altogether, and they don't launch anything else. Now, unfortunately, that's
Right.
a Just because that product didn't work out doesn't mean that you don't what you know doesn't help anyone else. It's just you got to tweak it a little bit. That's why if you're putting less effort up front and put that effort into testing it more, you can come up with a better product the first time. And as you and I know, your first product is always your worst product, right? You'll always build upon them, but don't make it a point that just because it fell on its face and it didn't really work, quit altogether and start something else. Because we see that all the time, like the bright, shiny object. People try something for a little while, and the first sign of a problem or a potential objection, they quit it altogether and start something totally different.
Right, exactly. And that, when I see it, becomes frustrating because you see people with this potential, but they hit that first roadblock and think, oh no, this didn't work. And what they don't realize is everybody's successful today, doesn't matter what type of business they had, they all started the same way, and it usually wasn't pretty, like, well, that didn't work.
Yep.
But they kept going.
You got to keep doing it.
Right, if no one runs, has that home run right out the gate. It's usually it's a stumbling block. Something didn't go right. You think of like with professional speakers, like they're going to do this great seminar, and the first one they do, they have 10 people, and half of them are family.
Yeah.
But they got started and they kept going.
They got started. That gives you the initial boost that you need to keep going. As late Stephen Covey says, private victories precede public victories. Before public knows that you're an overnight success, you have many small private victories on your backpack that's going to keep you moving and moving and moving along the line, because you don't know when you're going to have that public presence. But when you do, everyone thinks that, oh my God, I can't believe this guy just showed up one day and made X amount, or he did a $1 million launch. That happens, but prior to that, no one really knows that you failed 10 times or you still kept going.
Right, exactly. People forget about the struggle along the way, and that's so critical. I think in the world of marketing, that's something that has to be brought to the surface and tell people you're going to have a period of time where it's just going to suck. The suck factor on a scale of 1 to 10 might be an 11, but you have to push through.
You have to push through, yes. And also, I think self-analysis is really important too. When you have a failure, you cannot avoid to be upset about it or disappointed about it. But when you get through that period, I think you have to kind of debrief and kind of break your process into chunks to understand at what point your system or your product or your service got away from solving the problem. Because usually it's not the whole thing, right? You could have a great product or service. Maybe it was a delivery of that. You use a webinar software that didn't really perform. I've been on webinars that the guy was doing a great presentation, and in the middle of it, on minute 15, he got disconnected and he was not aware he was running it for the entire hour. Then he was wondering why he didn't get sales. So technology could be one thing. So it's sometimes important that when you're done, you're crying, you're being upset, just sit back and understand what really happened, because sometimes it could be the small thing, and when you capture that, when you kind of tweak it a little bit, that's it. Because failure is not a failure unless you think it is a failure, right? You take it as a failure. You can mess up and find out where the problem was. Just tweak that one little piece, and boom, your car is running again.
Right, exactly. It's so critical to test what's working and what's not working and look at how you can have that improvement. Just like you said with the webinar, you think about how many times technology has not gone right and you just didn't know it. And I like to say that one of the easiest ways to avoid that type of scenario, if you're going to be doing a webinar, have a friend be on it. And,
Yep.
if something's going wrong, tell them to text you so you can at least know what's happening. Otherwise, you might be thinking, this is working great. And meanwhile, like, it's so quiet. I wonder why. Like, oh, whoops. So.
Yeah, especially with webinar softwares, they can get really, really tricky, and you don't want your first trial to be on your actual customers.
Right.
There's 2 or 3 trials, and it can cost a lot of money to bring 100, 150 people on a webinar. To that technology flop on you. That's not definitely a pleasant feeling.
Right, exactly. That's why it's so critical that when you're looking at software platforms to use, see if they have a trial, test it out. You run a small webinar with a group of people to see how does it work, does it flow well? Because sometimes you'll see these brand new shiny webinar platforms. We have the most amazing thing in the world, and you get in there like, this one stinks.
Yeah, my philosophy with that, I stay away from anything that's too new. I don't want to be the first victim.
Right.
Let it run a little bit and get feedback from people. Then I can jump in and try it out, because usually anything software related, the first round is not the best round. And they're just looking for user feedback. And there are things that's not going to be working. And I'm not going to let that happen on my dime.
Right, exactly. If there's times it's great to be first in the gate, but other times, no, I don't want to be first. If it's something like presentation-wise, webinar software, oh no, I want to make sure this thing's working. There's no kinks in it. And especially because, like, I've seen some newer platforms come out where they look amazing, but a key drawback is you can't access them on a mobile device. And
Oh,
well,
ouch.
you look at how many people today, just
Yeah.
because of what's going on, they're going to watch a webinar on their phone or on a tablet.
They can be on gym or driving and whatnot, and they want to still listen to it. They don't want to miss it. You got to copy
Right.
to your market or whatever they're doing. If you're not mobile on every level possible, then you're not getting closer to your market enough to be able to sell anything or service them.
Right. And that is so key. So some of these newer ones, I thought, this looks amazing. And then I decided, well, let me check this platform out on my phone. Oh, no, you can't watch this on your phone. Never mind. That one,
Never
it's
mind.
off the list.
Yep. I'm sure it looks really user-friendly on the front end, right?
Right. On the front end, great. It looks amazing on a desktop. On a phone, it's a no-go. So when you think about it from that perspective, it's something we have to keep in mind in all areas of business. It's how does people can make sure their content it can be consumed by a mobile audience.
That's so true. Mobile is the big way to go. Just to give you an example, we have a lot of clients in the financial area. They're selling loans and mortgages and cash advance deals. And we've been working with them for a couple of years. And most of their budgets were being spent on AdWords or Facebook ads to generate leads, asking people to fill out a lead form or come to a landing page. But over time, we slowly started adding mobile campaigns as well. Now, one of our best performing campaigns on Google is the call-only campaign, which is, they made it work, which is amazing, right? So people who are searching for some of the services, it usually works better for like emergency services. If you're in trouble with your plumbing, if your house is flooding, or if you have an emergency dental situation that you're in a lot of pain. You're not going to go through and do a lot of due diligence about companies and spend time because you have a bleeding neck problem and it needs to be solved immediately. So in those cases,
Right.
people searching on Google, they take on this call-only campaign and click on it and call the customer immediately. And now those campaigns are performing amazing, while most of the other competitors are they're still trying to optimize their AdWords to the best of their ability, not noticing where the market is shifting.
Right. And that's so critical. You brought that up because it gets into behavior patterns. That if there's an emergency, you're not going to sit there and just want to look to see, well, who looks like they're the best. If your tooth is in pain or your toilet looks like it's a volcano erupting, you're calling whoever is first, period.
Whoever can show up will show up, believe me.
Right, like you can be here in 10 minutes, great.
Quick.
That's all you care about.
Yeah, I don't care who you are, just show up. That's why it's not only the right offer, it is the timing of the offer, right? I'm sure there will be more qualified companies who can solve the problem, but guess what? This campaign did a better job than them, and the customer did not even see their offer. So having the right offer and the right system, the right product alone does not solve the problem. You got to understand how your customers are finding you and find the best way to get in front of them.
Exactly, and that is critical to make sure you have that right offer there because you look at how many times someone might have the most amazing business, but they're putting the wrong foot forward, and people look at it and wonder, no, I'm just not feeling that. It's kind of like I like to jokingly say with people, you could have the best steak in the world, but if you're marketing to an audience of vegetarians, it's not going to do any good.
Yep, it will definitely not work. And I see a lot of that happening on like Facebook ads. If you're on Facebook, when you check your news feed, sometimes you see products and services that's definitely not related to you. For example, I think it was last night I saw an ad on like the certain type of makeup. I'm like, that's awesome. I'm sure my wife would like it, but I'm the wrong audience. You're paying for this. You're putting it in front of me. So something is doing wrong, something with the marketing end. So targeting is definitely important. And I think you can't mess around with that. And Facebook has advanced quite a bit, and Google has advanced quite a bit. But if you truly understand your audience, it's so easy to put your offer in front of them.
Right, exactly. It's just a matter of spending an extra few minutes think about who your exact audience is and target them. It's interesting we bring this up, as just the yesterday I was looking at my news feed on Facebook, and I noticed a car wash that was running ads. I thought, oh, this is great. I look at their locations when it came up, clear on the other side of town. Like,
Oh
I
boy.
don't care how good of an offer it is, I'm not driving to the other side of town.
Now, even if he offers to me for free, I'm not going to drive up there to get that offer, right?
Right. So when it comes to targeting, this is where people have to know the demographics. They have to know the psychographics that for certain types of businesses, people are not going to want to drive outside of a certain radius. So set the radius of your ad.
Yep. Sometimes simple as that. And unfortunately, the many businesses do not understand how that works. And I see that problem with the agencies running ads as well. It's so easy to spend someone else's money, but at the end of the day, I think you should feel equally responsible that these people trusted you with an ad budget. You can't just put random ads just to show them, hey, take a screenshot and show them, hey, your ads are running. You'll hopefully get some results and whatnot. And if they don't get results, they blame the platform. Like that happens a lot. I talk to tens of businesses every day, hundreds of them every month. And usually, when you talk about like certain marketing strategy, the response is, yeah, Facebook marketing doesn't work, or social media doesn't work, or Google doesn't work, while thousands of companies are making billions of dollars through the same platform. So you can't tell me the platform doesn't work. Maybe you have not figured out how to make it work, or you have not worked with the right people to make it work for you.
Right. Because sometimes when you look at it, it's the offer that a business is putting forward. It's something that it's so specific that you're, I don't want to say you're looking for a unicorn, but you're pretty close to it in terms of the people that want to buy it.
Correct. Yes, and it does take the testing too. You can't. I mean, we dealt with a client, and they wanted to test it for a month. And I told them, listen, really, ads do not work that way. You're asking an algorithm to figure out your ideal customer based on your criteria, and it's going to ramp up, and it takes time. If you're in it to give it a try, this is not a software that you have 15-day tries or 30-day tries. You're just building an audience, and it takes time, so you have to be patient with that. Ruling out a campaign or a marketing platform altogether, I think, is a little selfish on your end, and it doesn't benefit in your business either, right? So you got to give it some time and trust people who've done this before, and they will get results for you. But a lot of people quit a little too early because they want the immediate gratification of running ads and getting results. But that there is optimization process, which is different for every business. And it doesn't, I'm not only talking about like online marketing, it isn't any type of marketing. When people put offers out there, immediately I see them withdraw the offer because they think, well, it's day two and it didn't work. So you got to sometimes give things to mature a little bit and make sure that they're being seen by people. And just going back to what we talked about, like tweak a little bit before you totally give up on it.
Right. And I think that's where businesses have to realize it's not that instant fix to be committed for 3 to 6 months. Because in the first part, you're testing things out, you're figuring out what's working, what's responding, what's, and you think about the number of ad sets and the number of actual ads you're going to be creating. You're trying to figure out which one is going to resonate the most, and then you're beginning to fine tune it. It's not, well, we're going to create one ad and that one's going to work. Well, no, it doesn't work that way.
Absolutely, it does not. And unfortunately, those are the people who do not have like a multi-channel marketing system in place. They somehow figured out maybe one channel feeding them, the others they totally gave up on. And if that one channel fails for whatever reason, like we happened during the recession, right? The companies who did not have this whole system feeding leads into their funnel, when that one source of revenue was cut off, either they were targeting people who work in certain places, and when that industry lost their jobs, then your customer is cut off and you don't have any business. Then you go out of business. So you got to always have a lifeline out there and test different things at different times, and have like you got to have your pipeline filled all the time. And social media is one of those ways to do it. It's just you got to give it some time and trust the process. And when you get leads, make sure you act on them. Like that's the next thing. When you get leads, these are only hot for a couple of hours, sometimes for 24 to 48 hours. You can't just rely on getting a lead and get back to them 5 days later, because guess what? They're not going to remember you.
Right, and I think that's where it's important for that business owner to look at the process they have in place. How can they respond right away versus letting it simmer? I think a great example is you look at real estate agents. I know quite a few, and unfortunately, so many of them are terrible with returning phone calls.
They are.
And it's detrimental because you look at it as, if you thought about every phone call being worth $100 to you, you'd make sure that you had a way to respond to every single person possible.
Big time. If you put a dollar value to every marketing effort or every call, that you would take a look at things a lot more differently. I absolutely agree with that.
Right, and so that's where people have to make that adjustment. How can you have that system in place? So when you're speaking of systems like this, with lead generation, what are the different channels you think that businesses should be using so they're not relying on just, let's say, Facebook alone or Google alone to generate leads for their business?
Yeah, there are so many things that they can do, but whenever I talk to a potential business owner, either to coach them or to take them as a client for us to do their marketing, going back to our earlier point, I want to find out what kind of systems they have in place. In other words, if I recommend them to use a platform, or if we do generate leads for them, what will happen next? Do they have a game plan? If a lead comes in, what is their process of answering the phone call? What is their follow-up process? If a person doesn't answer the phone, do they have an email marketing system set in place? Because let's be honest, everyone is getting bombarded with so many marketing messages every single day. So a single touch point is nowhere near enough. You need to have at least 10, 15 touch points, especially if your brand is not known. If they don't know who you are, you need to have a system in place so they can hear from you constantly, not in a way of like a pitching fashion or like a salesy, but you do your follow-up, but they didn't hear from you in the form of a case study or the recent article you published, and you follow up again about the offer. So if you build your credibility, it's amazing that sometimes people answer that phone call the sixth time, then you close the deal because you've done your work. So I look at that part before we decide which channel they need to be using. Once they have, they rarely have all of those pieces in place. Well, if they don't, we kind of work on that first and work on their offer. The next phase, next thing is, before we jump onto any of the platforms, I want to find out about their existing clients. I'm going to give you an example. I was invited to a meeting by a sizable financial company in New York City. And when we sat down, they asked a very similar question. They said, "You know what? We tried direct mail, we tried Google, we tried Facebook. Just tell us what's new. What else you can offer us that we can try? We haven't tried. Give us something that you haven't tried that's going to work." And they were spending about $40,000 on direct mail and $20,000 on Google. Their monthly ad budget altogether was about $80,000. And I said, "Yeah, we can talk about it, guys. But my question to you is, do you have an existing client base?" They said, "Yes." "All right. Do you also have an email list that you've been collecting over time?" They said, "Yeah, we have a small email list of like 15,000 people, but you don't have to really worry about it because they don't respond. We send them an email once a week, and our open rate is like 2% and whatnot." I said, "All right, so let's do this. If you trust me enough at this point, I want to send an email campaign to this existing list that you've been gathering for years. Then let's set up another meeting and evaluate our findings and see what happens as a feedback." They said, "Fine, it doesn't cost us anything. We'll just give you the access, and you'll just run an email campaign." And I didn't really run an email campaign. I just put together one simple email that makes a direct offer, because you'd be surprised how many people forget to make a direct offer about their services. They talk about their branding, they talk about a great day at the office, they talk about like happy customers and whatnot, but they're afraid to make a direct offer because psychologically they think if they make a direct offer, if they get declined, no one likes that feeling, or people might leave my list. Well, if they have no intention of buying from you, if they have no intention of hearing from you, well, they shouldn't be on your list anyways. You're only reaching
Right.
2% of the people anyways, so the remaining 98% are not even caring about your message. So having them on your list is just a figure. So I wanted to kind of do a deep cleaning, put together really simple email, text email, and the subject line was quick question. And the message itself, not on verbatim, but hey, we're offering this service. Are you interested in talking to us? We can do this for you. Here's a link for you to apply. So just I sent it out to that email list of 13,000. The open rate was 45%, and they got 19 applications, and the total amount funded by this company was $99,000 within just and
Nice.
next meeting I came in, and they literally gave me like bear hugs. It's like, "Oh my God, this was amazing. How did you do it?" I'm like, "Nothing new. It was just an email campaign. These people were hungry for an offer. They even forgot what services you offer because you kept sending newsletters after newsletters every Tuesday and every Thursday and whatnot. They didn't know what you were offering." And I just reminded them, "Hey guys, if you need money or funding, we can give it to you." So my point is, so that changes. There's so many areas that people are not really focusing on because they see these Facebook ads and Google ads and SEO all the time. They think that they need to jump on board without really first seeing what they have in their hands. Sometimes it doesn't cost money to make money. If you've been in business, you have a list, you have some following, you have existing clients. It is a lot easier to sell to existing clients who already chose you in the past and pay you, and hopefully you did a great job with their services. It's so easier to sell them again and again and again and come up with an offer. Once you build up a budget, then we can test different things on Facebook ads and Google and other areas.
Right, and it all comes down to something simple. If you don't ask, you don't receive.
You do not receive. You think that people know, you assume that people know what you're offering, but believe it or not, they don't.
Right, and where businesses fall in this trap is they're giving tons and tons of value consistently, but then if they don't put an offer out, well, you're never going to sell anything. But you did hit something critical where I think people get just stuck in their head of the list size. You want to clean your list. You don't want people that are never going to buy from you on it. It's like if you want, just an ego figure, go work out or something. But if you want effectiveness, with your email campaigns, you need to actually sell them something. If they don't want to buy from you, kick them off your list.
Yeah, I think it shouldn't be a big deal. Many people make a big deal out of that. They're like, oh my God, 10 people balance and oh, 10 people unsubscribe. I'm like, that's okay. Maybe they were not
Right.
the right fit in the first place. Just because they ended up on your list somehow doesn't mean that you got to keep them forever. Because that's
Right.
going back to the first thing I said, the currency for business is money, whether you like it or not. And if you have a list and if it's not making money for you, either you're stuck on providing like constant value and not making any offers. Of course, you got to provide value to people and you got to show them your expertise and you got to help them out with what they need. But if you're not offering your full package or your system, you're not being fair to yourself. But most importantly, you're not being fair to them because if they can make use of your free offer, like the value they were providing, I can guarantee you that they'll make use of your paid offer. But you just got to put it in front of them and explain it to them what they get and how it will solve this big problem that they have. Break it down, make it really, really simple. You don't need 15 emails to explain that. Sometimes all it takes is one email. Sometimes all it takes is making 10 phone calls to your existing customers and tell them, hey, you've been using us for X amount of years, but we just came up with this new product and it's a little improved, and I think it's going to add 10-15% to your bottom line. Would you be interested? Now, that's a direct offer, right?
Right.
If they know, well, they're not interested. If they say yes, then it gives you the permission. We call it permission-based marketing. Always ask first instead of spamming people. Then you can talk more about your offer. And if they say, all right, so does this sound interesting? Yes. Okay. Do you want to find out how we can get started? Yes. So you got about so many yeses at that point. If you get no's and somewhere at that point, you know that you put that customer on a different bucket. You put the ones on a different bucket. So having a bulk of 15,000, 20,000 emails doesn't mean anything unless you segment it and know who your buyers, who are your super buyers, buyers who would buy anything from you. Like we're dealing with 80-20 rule here, right? Certain percentage of your customers, no matter what price point your offer is, they'll buy from you. That's just who they are. Some would
Right.
question, they'll be super analytical, just you got to find out who they are. So once you know who your audience is, you can put different offers in front of them. If you have an audience that asks a question all the time, then you got to put together an offer that gives every little bit of details, the details of your offer, so they can make a logical decision. On the other end, you have people who act more with their emotions than with their logical side of their brain. So they want to hear the stories and they want to see how others are affected by your products and services and put that offer in front of them and have them purchase through that way.
Right. And that's key when you look at it. It's making sure the offer is the right fit. And that's where it gets into the whole notion of segmentation, knowing that if someone is at a particular point along the customer journey, the right offer is presented to them. If you just met somebody, you don't necessarily want to put a high ticket offer in front of them. It might be something that's a little bit lower price that starts building up more trust. It just depends on what your business model is.
Yes, yeah, so you got to build it up. Maybe your $4,000 package provides massive amount of value, but then barrier to entry for your customer is really high. So you touch a really important point there. That's why you got to have your value funnel set up. Maybe you start with something small. It could be a free trial, or it could be like a $37 product, which in marketing world is called a tripwire, right? you want one commitment from them. The first commitment is usually they provide an email address. You provide them something free, they provide the email address. Then you make an offer to them right after that, immediately, to identify who your buyers are. Who are the people who would buy immediately? And the offer is so small, it's almost no-brainer for the value they're getting. So they buy your $30, $40 product. Then immediately after that, you want to find out who your like super buyers are, people who would buy regardless, and you make another offer. And certain percentage of the people will buy that as well, but most of the people will not buy, will not opt in. Then you start nurturing those people. So along this process, the customer is not seeing this on the front end, but on the back end, you're segmenting your customers. The people who buy your second offer, if you make them a better offer on the third time, the odds are they will buy that as well. And they will usually end up scaling themselves up to your $4,000 product really, really fast. While the remaining of the people, it will take some time to get them there. And a percentage of people will never buy from you. They just want free stuff. And you cannot change that.
Right. Right, exactly. You can't get away from that. It's just part of the whole buying cycle, but it's that responsibility a business owner has is to have the systems in place so you can funnel people through each step along the journey to keep them going forward so you can increase your revenue.
And at the end, once you have them take them through your entire value ladder, as Russell Brunson says, you got to have a value ladder starting from a free offer to a small offer, the mid-size, large, and your ultimate high-end product. Then once you figure out all of that, then you got to come up with a continuity plan where you can charge a monthly subscription model to people. And I know some of your audience might think, yeah, but it doesn't work for my industry. But I've seen it work for like certain industries that are. They've been around for a long time, and you don't see a continuity model such as chiropractors and dentists, and they made it happen. So there's a way to make it
Right.
happen for many of the industries. First, you got to figure out your entire value ladder. How do you take someone from the bottom of your list all the way up to buying your $4,000, $10,000, $25,000 product? And how do you put a certain percentage of your list into this continuity model where you charge them a monthly subscription by giving them additional value? And whatever pain they're trying to solve that they need continuous support, you can set that up. Then you have an actual funnel, and then at that point you really are not worried about economy that much, the weather that much, who the president is and where the politics is and all that stuff. Of course, every piece of that plays a role in your business, but you're not as afraid as someone who only has one source of income coming from only one direction. If that part is severed, then their entire business is devastated.
Right. And you can really put a that type of continuity program in any type of business. You look at massage places, how many of them will have monthly membership programs? Like you're paying, let's say, $59 a month, you get a 60-minute massage, and oh, you want more massages than that? You get a discount on all the other services. So if they can make it work in the massage industry, pretty much every industry, there is a way to make it work.
Almost all of them, with no exceptions, you can come up with a continuity plan. Absolutely.
Right, it's all a matter of thinking differently. How can you keep people coming back in your door on a consistent basis?
Because some of those people will want more and more from you. And what frustrates me and a lot of business owners without them noticing is that they don't have sometimes anything else to offer. So they come across these hyper buyers, like they want to buy more from them, and they're like they don't have anything else to offer. So that's why you got to sit down and think. Every business should have a high-end offer, no matter what business you're in. Don't expect all of your customers to buy that, but there are certain customers who are going to opt into that one. So always think about your sit down and think about all the services that you offer, and think about creating a package that's gonna that's gonna make the most revenue for you, and that's gonna bundle a lot of things that you offer and put it in front of your certain customers. And believe me, a certain percentage will buy that.
Right. The best analogy I heard to explain it very well was if someone had a hot dog cart, let's say in New York City, and you'd have your regular hot dogs out there, but then to have the big upsell, you have like the lobster roll hot dog that had truffles on it, and you're selling it for like $300 because it's almost a guarantee you will sell a couple of those every single day. And some people think, but how? Like, it's simple. You're going to get some people because they want it because it looks special. It's awesome. And they want to have that for themselves. So if you're looking in the same way in your business, there's going to be people who are going to buy the low-end stuff, but then there's people, they want the premium quality product. And to them, it's worth it for that experience.
It definitely is because their value, the way they perceive value is a lot different than other people. I think to add to your example, another person that I highly admire as a marketer is Joel Polish. He does a lot of great things. And if you know his story, he started out as a carpet cleaner. So the barrier to entry to carpet cleaning business is very low. You just go rent the machine or buy it for a couple $100 and you get started immediately, right? And many of those people who started out, they were not making any money at all. So what Joe did is he first figured out how to make consistent income after failing a couple of times, of course. Then he noticed that other carpet cleaners were having the same problem as he was. So he turned his expertise into a product and sold it to those people with a low-end offer. Then he had another product that he was selling for a middle price. I think it was like $997, like mid-level pricing. He sold that as well and made a couple of more million dollars. Then at the end, he created a mastermind. I think before the mastermind he sells right now for only, he was selling it to carpet cleaners. I think it was $10,000+ to attend the mastermind. So when you think about it, he was a carpet cleaner. Like he was just going door to door to clean carpets, and he would give pricing per room and per home and all that stuff. Then once he figured out what works, he was not trying to keep it to himself. He said, you know what? Other people are having a big problem with this. He noticed the problem pattern again. He created a solution and he became a millionaire out of that.
Right. And it all goes back down to what we talked about in the beginning. It's identifying a problem and providing a solution.
Big time.
And that's as simple as it comes down to. No matter what you're looking at in terms of with lead generation, it's solving a problem that people are looking for, or you're looking at that value ladder. It's how do you consistently provide a solution to a problem people are having?
That's the right formula. That's what people should be thinking all the time. Like every single day when you wake up, when you're running your business, what else can I offer that's going to solve a bigger problem they have in relation to my business?
Right, exactly. So as we begin to wrap everything up, one of the things I always like to bring up in each episode, it's something that each person can do. So with that, what is one thing you recommend every business owner, entrepreneur do in their business to start creating more success?
I recommend that they take time to write down the things that work in their business. Every time they do it, it brings them results. So it could be small things, big things, doesn't matter. So I don't want them to focus on what does not work. I want them to focus on what works to bring clients, bring more revenue, and take a deeper look into that one. I don't want them to be overshadowed by the negativity of the things do not work. And once they figure out what that thing is, capitalize on it. If it is a direct mail campaign that worked, all right, do more of that. If it is a Facebook ad that worked, but the other ads did not work, do more of that one and work on that one. Because I think the challenge, one of the challenges with businesses is that they want to do many things all at once. And if you haven't figured out your offer the right way, you're doing many things wrong all at once. So first find out what is really working, even though it's a tiny thing, just spend more time, money, and resources on that one. Until you totally figure it out, then you add multiple channels to it, then you have something what we call multi-channel marketing in place.
Right, and that's perfect. So how can people reach out to you and learn more about what you do and investigate the type of services you have for businesses?
They can reach out to me in two ways if they are interested in having us do their marketing or talk about their system in place to see if we can help out. The website is localmarketingstars.com. The second area is if they're interested in running Facebook ads for other businesses and make a monthly income doing that, they can check me out at 10krevenueclub.com. 10 is a number, 10krevenueclub.com.
Oh, excellent. Well, I want to thank you for coming onto the Big Movement podcast today and sharing your wealth of wisdom on marketing, problem solving, and just all around understanding what does it take for people to be success and asking for the offer.
Thanks for having me, Byron. It was a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Big Movement Podcast today. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Now that you've surely been inspired to take your entrepreneurial career and business to the next level, you can stop by the website and get more. And if you're ready to boost your business brand, be sure to grab your free report, 7 Easy Steps to Build Your Brand Today.